Hello everyone, and welcome again to the Associate Affiliate Cricket Podcast. We're back onto a number of different tournaments this week. Lots of cricket has been played, and there's lots more to come as the Northern Hemisphere summer rolls in. And to join me to talk about those matches and the ones to come is my regular host, Andrew Nixon. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Russ. How are you, buddy?
Andrew, I guess we'll start with the Americas Division 1 T20 qualifiers, which were played in Indianapolis in the first week of May. And I think when we previewed this, we were expected it probably to be a little bit closer than it was. In the end, each of the four teams were separated and there weren't a huge number of close games.
Yeah, obviously Canada won the tournament and USA second. We tipped Suriname to cause a surprise and, well, they lost every game, some of them quite comprehensively. So that's our usual form in tipping teams at tournaments. But yeah, I think it went as expected, but as you say, not as close as we thought it would be. So yeah, I think we expected Canada and USA to take their qualification spots. But disappointing from Suriname, really. They'd really come on in the last couple of years, and it seems to have gone backwards a bit.
Yeah, Bermuda was a bit disappointing too, in a way. We were expecting, a bit unsure of their preparation and the team they were sending there, but I guess the most disappointing thing for them is that their top two run scorers were David Hemp and Janeria Tucker, and they keep going back to that well, and it's fascinating and impressive that those two players can continue to perform at this level, but you really have to wonder about Bermuda's pipeline of talent when those two are still their best two players.
Yeah, I mean, Tucker's 40 now and David Hemp is 44, so you can't imagine they've got too many years left in them. And there doesn't seem to be the youth coming through either. So, although Suriname didn't do too well in this tournament, you can well see them taking over Bermuda in the next few years.
And the USA seem to have picked up a little bit of young talent as well. Some impressive efforts there by Baba with the bat, and Taylor, of course, is continuing to come on slowly, and Patel with the ball. They're all performed very well.
Yeah, I think there's talent in the USA. I think there always has been. It's obviously the, as we often talk about on this show, the administration that's letting them down. They are producing young players, and but they sort of drift away from the game eventually, or they aren't pitched because they don't know the right person, or they're not playing in the right league. And so, I think if the USA could get their administration sorted out, then they have some potential to improve. But will that ever happen?
And by our reports, the Indianapolis World Sports Park was a pretty good venue, perhaps lacking in facilities, but and I guess we expected that the pitches would be particularly slow, and there was a lot of spin bowling that did well, and the matches were fairly low scoring as a consequence. But apart from that, it despite some rain, it seemed to produce some pretty good cricket.
Yeah, and it recovered from rain very well. I think the facilities in Fort Lauderdale tend not to recover very well from the weather. I think the drainage is a lot better at this facility in Indianapolis. As you say, it's lacking a clubhouse. There's nowhere for the players to change, which is a bit unfortunate for an international venue. But it's early days, and it seems to have hosted the tournament a little bit better than the facility in Florida did, to be honest. And the ICC even congratulated them for hosting it. And it's obviously disappointing that USACA couldn't get their national championship played there.
And looking forward, we'll do a much more comprehensive preview of the teams before this tournament, but Canada and the US will be heading to the World 2020 qualifiers, and they've got a fair bit to prove given the struggles of the Americas in the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Americas have been moving downhill in the last few years, as we've discussed on this show before, and they didn't do particularly well in the last qualifier, especially the USA, who finished second to last, I think. So, yeah, a lot to prove, and we'll see what happens there. But I don't expect either of them to actually qualify for the World 2020, but if one of them can get close, maybe you'll get to the playoffs. I think that'll be seen as a success for them. Joining us now on the podcast is Jersey Cricket Board Chief Executive Chris Vinty. Thanks for coming on the show, Chris.
Hi, good morning, or evening, whatever.
People can listen to it at any time, so it could be in the afternoon. It could be in the middle of the night. Obviously here to talk about Europe Division 1, which Jersey hosted and indeed won. Your thoughts on the tournament?
Well, firstly, we were very pleased to be able to host the tournament, and fortunately the rain kept away, so all matches were played pretty much to schedule. So in that respect, it was a very successful tournament all round. And Jersey winning it was a bonus on top of all that. Some very good cricket played all round. Early season wickets, are not the same as you get in July and August. But I think the teams enjoyed themselves. They played some good cricket, and we saw some runs and wickets.
And as you say, it's a bonus to win. I suppose it's another bonus that you secure the tournament with a win over Guernsey.
Well, we don't like to go into that too much, but yes, it's always good to beat Guernsey, and they'd have enjoyed beating us as well, but there you go.
And I thought in general, the tournament really close going into the last day from a neutral point of view. It was very sort of exciting. Any of four teams could have won it on that last day.
Well, I think that's what made the final day, really. It was quite tense all round, even though, we beat Guernsey. We still had to wait for half an hour or so before the other result from Denmark, Italy came through. And I think that sort of tension at the end of a 3 or 4 day tournament is great for cricket and makes for some interesting experiences for the players and admin people, really. Yeah, it's good.
Any sort of performances from the Jersey team or from any of the other teams that particularly stand out for you?
Well, I didn't see all the games, but there were some good batting performances all round. So we had one or two for Jersey. Jonty Jenner's 80 odd against Norway was a bit special. Ed Farley batted well. Sandry from Italy made some good runs. Freddie Clocker, obviously for Denmark, made 80 in one game out of a very low total, which was quite exceptional. But that's what he's capable of doing. So in amidst all the results, there were some very good individual batting performances, yeah.
Now, looking ahead, obviously now you qualify for the World 2020 qualifier, which you'll be playing in Ireland. It's quite a tough group, so Ireland, Nepal, Hong Kong, Papua New Guinea, Namibia and USA. A lot of teams you haven't played too much, and some very sort of high-ranked teams that have played in World Cups and World 2020s. What do you think your chances are out of that tournament?
Well, I think the whole thing is a bit scary, to be fair. But we've played some of these countries before in World Cricket League, Nepal, for example, and USA we've played before, Hong Kong. But to the prospect of playing Ireland at Malahide in a televised game is quite exciting because that's their main ground. That's where they were going to play England the other day, but it was washed out. The prospect is fantastic, and, our guys have just got to go there and enjoy that.
Just in terms of the scheduling of that tournament, so I know the European Under-19 Championship is at the same time, and obviously Jonty Jenner, I assume, would have been playing in that tournament had it been at a different time. Do you think that's a sort of a bit of a odd decision to schedule those tournaments at the same time?
Yes, this has been a subject of discussion in the office for a little while now. Yes, it's not straightforward, and we're in a fairly unique position because we have a relatively small player pool. There are going to be players vying for places in the senior side from the under-19 squad. Our decision, which we have to make in a fairly short space of time, is where we go with these players. It's not ideal, but because of the schedules involved for the 19s and for the World Cup qualifier, these dates are pretty much set, and we just have to work around them.
At these times, thoughts turn to Keith Dennis, who would have loved to have seen this, but obviously, unfortunately, he hasn't. A nice little tribute to him, I suppose, being able to take part in a World Cup qualifying tournament.
Well, he would have been very, very proud of what we've achieved this week. He would have been on the sidelines there, willing us to win, which we did. Not just the tournament, but willing us to beat Guernsey. He'd have loved it. He'd have been made up to know that we're there. He'd also have been very keen to see us. We're on two stages at the moment, the Under-19 World Cup route and, of course, the T20 route. And who would have dreamt that in 2006 when we started?
Yeah, so you're coming up to 10 years as an ITC member. The decision to become an ITC member has been vindicated very much, hasn't it?
Oh, Very much so. Very much so. I mean, it's been a roller coaster for 10 years, and long may it continue.
Looking ahead beyond the T20 qualifier, what else is in the pipeline for Jersey this year?
Well, this year we were going to be playing World Cricket League Division 5 in sort of November, December, but I gather that is now going to be in 2016, which is a relief in a way, because we would have struggled with that. But in 2016, we hope we've got World Cricket League Division 5, the next round, which we may be able to host depending on when they decide to play it. But other than that, we just wait and see what ICC want us to do.
Okay, well, that just about wraps it up. So thanks for coming on the show, and good luck for Ireland.
Thank you very much. Pleasure.
Moving on, as the cricket did the following week, the European Division 1 Championship was held in Jersey. And if I had a little sound effect, I could play a little cheer for the fact that we managed to tip Jersey to go through. Italy were still the favourites, but as we discussed in our preview, Jersey have a really young and exciting team, and particularly Jonty Jenner, who scored quite heavily throughout the tournament, and they came through on the final day, a really fascinating final day.
Jonty Jenner had a fantastic tournament, I think, against Norway. I think he scored 80-odd from about 30-odd balls, so he had a fantastic innings there. And but yeah, in general, Jersey, I think they were the best team. I think it's safe to say, despite we predicted them as an outside chance for qualification, I think they ended up being the best team. They only lost that one game and against Denmark, who finished second again. Jersey, fair play to them. They've done well. I think they've got a tough draw at the World 2020 qualifier. They're in the group with Ireland, Nepal, Hong Kong, Papua New Guinea, Namibia and the USA. So they're going to find that a little difficult. A lot of teams have played in World Cups and World 2020s there. So that could be a step too far for them. And they've done well. They've been an ICC member now for a decade, and getting to a World Cup qualifier is a fantastic achievement for a country with a very small player pool.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, that one, because if you look through the statistics, they actually seem to have the best depth of any sides there, and Denmark was again very heavily dependent on Freddie Klocker, Italy on Crowley and Petrikola and Sandri, and beyond that there's not a lot of names turning up in the statistics, and the matches tended to turn on how well they played. Jersey didn't go undefeated. It was a pretty fascinating tournament. Those four teams tied up in the last day. Guernsey, who we said to keep an eye on as well, just to see how they go, was in the mix right up until the end as well. Jersey have a really good sort of base of the side there compared to their fellow European sides, it appears, given how the players performed.
Yeah, and I think the key is now to try and capitalise on this and sort of keep playing at this standard, and I don't see any reason why they can't. They have a very good production line, essentially, there, of producing young players, and I think long may it continue. They've got a very good setup there.
At the other end of the table, Norway and France ended up going down to the last day where they were playing each other for who would get relegated, and I think it was perhaps a little bit unfortunate for France that they'd probably been the better performed team through the tournament, but they ended up losing that final match.
Yeah, France had a couple of close games. They were pretty close against Italy. Italy took until the last over, and really, as you were saying earlier, relied on Carl Sandri to get them out of a bit of a hole. He scored a very quick half century against France. But France, there were some odd decisions, as we'll come to a bit when we talk about the World Cricket League qualifying match they played against Norway. And it's hard to see where exactly where they can go from here. I think there's some talk in France that perhaps they've put all their eggs in one basket. They've concentrated so much on this tournament, they've forgotten about developing young players and whatnot. And there's a lot of criticism that they've only picked players from the Paris region rather than looking around the country. And France seems to have taken a bit of a step backwards since the last Division 1 tournament 2 years ago.
Looking at Italy and both Denmark, they've been teams that have been in the World 2020 qualifiers year in, year out of late, and this time they missed out. There was only the one place available. It's a bit of a worry for their cricket, particularly Denmark, who really were pretty much a power on par with the Netherlands and Ireland probably a decade and maybe two decades ago, to be slipping so far down.
Very unfortunate for them. Obviously, your jersey of sort of your jersey and Guernsey have come from your previous being sort of under the ECB system into the ICC, so that's sort of shook things up a little bit. But you know, the decline of Denmark, especially, has been very concerning. You even go back 10 years, and they were sort of up in the mix with Ireland and the Netherlands and Scotland, and it's a bit of a strange one. They've relied, I think, too much in recent years on Freddie Clocker, and obviously now Amjad Khan, now he's back, and they just don't seem to be producing the young players that they used to produce.
Yeah, and Italy, I mean, they play very well in the 2020 qualifiers, but they had a couple of players that aren't normally eligible for them in those matches, so it's they're expecting to get to the qualifiers based on the talent they have, but I do know that they've been looking over the last few years to try and develop that youth system, but it seems to still be a way away for them, and it's going to take a few years for them to get players through that are able to perform at this level, given the improvement of other sides.
Yeah, I think the key for them, as you know, they've missed out on this qualifier this time, and obviously there won't be another qualifier for 4 years now. I think the key is to try and concentrate on that youth system over the next few years and try and produce some more homegrown players rather than have to rely on the players with Italian heritage coming in from Australia and South Africa.
This tournament, of course, was immediately followed by the World Cricket League Division 6 qualifier. There was a single one-day international match between Norway and France. And again, France seemed to decline bit by bit as the week progressed, and they lost the final day match in the 2020 by 15 runs, but they ended up losing the 50-over game by 97 runs. Chavez Butt bowled them out, basically chasing 236, and he took 6 for 15, which is very impressive bowling figures by him, and disappointing for France, but great for Norway, I guess, that they're moving up into the World Cricket League.
Very, very good for Norway. I think in the Norwegian innings, Tom Lydiard took 6 wickets as well. So I think questions will have to be asked why in the actual 2020 tournament he played 4 of the 5 games, and in those 4 games only bowled 2 overs. If you've got a bowler who is obviously he's a talented bowler, he very nearly played for Durham University, I think last year or the year before. Was only sort of left out at the start of the game. He's a talented player, and I don't know why he only bowled 2 overs during the 2020s when he was obviously in some form, as we saw in that Norwegian innings.
There was an international match between Ireland and England. It's the traditional match played every 2 years between England and Ireland. England, as has also now become a tradition, had sent across what amounted to a second 11 almost. Ireland would have been hopeful for a number of things. Firstly, for a decent crowd, and secondly, for a win. In the end, the crowd was probably going to be disappointed because it rained after only 18 overs, but they weren't doing particularly well at that point anyway. They were 4 for 56 and struggling.
Unfortunate for Ireland that the weather didn't play a ball. But you're playing an ODI in early May in Ireland. The weather's always going to affect it, as it would in England as well, to be honest.
Which is going to cause even more issues in 2 years' time, because it's apparently been scheduled for April instead.
Yeah, England, to be fair, do have a very busy 2017, but you're getting to Ireland from England isn't a long journey. It's half an hour on a plane. You could easily do, you could easily fly in on the morning of the match and fly in after the match is over if you wanted to. It's not as if you're going to Ireland takes, 2 weeks out of the season or something. So scheduling a game for April in Ireland, I think is just madness. I think it's a sign that the ECB basically just don't care about these matches. These only sort of started being every 2 years when in 2007, Ireland hosted a series between South Africa and India. Turned out, apparently, that the ECB had sold Sky the rights to cricket in the whole of the UK, when obviously ECB don't sanction cricket in the whole of the UK. And then Sky sort of, and the ECB kicks up a fuss saying it was going to affect their TV rights deal if there was another country in Europe hosting top level international cricket. So then this deal was that Sky would have Ireland's TV rights, or his first refusal to broadcast Ireland matches, and England would play this game every 2 years. England have shown distinct reluctance, and they seem to become more reluctant every year to actually make a big deal. Now, this could be a big rivalry. Ireland and England have had a bit of a rivalry in international cricket. Obviously, Ireland beat England at the World Cup in 2011, and what is going on at the ECB in terms of this? As I say, this could be marketed correctly. This could be one of the great rivalries in cricket. They could be playing a three match series every year against each other and making it into a big thing. The ECB just seem to want to fob Cricket Ireland off with what amounts to a you could call it the contractual obligation or the for all the interest the ECB seems to have in it.
I think you could just bet call most one day ODIs, contractual obligation ODIs, but
it's true.
This one is a particularly, as you say, it could be much more interesting. It could be part of a much broader way of trying to promote European cricket and the ECB expanding their markets. And if they own or at least are selling the rights to these markets, then they ought to be taking advantage of that and then trying to promote cricket in Ireland, not just between the two of them themselves, but also other Irish matches. And it's bizarre to just say, well, this market doesn't matter and we're just going to keep sending second-rate teams over in right immediately after a test match. I mean, this came less than a week, I think, after the final West Indian game, and it's in the past, it's been within a week of other tours that they've completed, so it's not even possible for them to send decent 11s across, and it's just squeezed in to the season.
Yeah, and then the scheduling as well, it's always on a weekday during the school term, it's never on on a weekend during the school holidays. This one as well came, it was the day after the UK general election, so it was going to be completely ignored in the media. What more can I say about it? The ECB, you need to pull the finger out and actually treat Ireland with a bit of seriousness. And, maybe the issue is they're seeing Ireland as a threat to their market when actually it could be a huge benefit to the market.
Yeah, or Ireland needs to stand up to the ECB and say, well, it's our right to promote matches that we want to play, and if you're not willing to help us, we'll have to go our own way. That's the other thing that has to be out there.
The ECB need all the friends it can get at the moment, and they don't want to be annoying too many people.
Is there anyone the ECB hasn't annoyed?
That's a good point. Probably not. Alistair Cook.
Maybe India. There was a much more important tour that kicked off the ICC Intercontinental Cup. Hong Kong travelled over to Windhoek and played the first four-day match of that competition. I think we mentioned in a preview there that it would be very difficult for them. There were eight players having their first-class debut. They haven't played a lot of multi-day cricket, and Namibia do because they play in the South African domestic leagues. And it probably proved that in this match, Namibia fought their way to 272, collapsed a little bit at the end, but managed to bowl Hong Kong out for 203, and then consolidate that lead fairly well, declaring it 5 for 232, which Hong Kong never really came close to chasing the 302 required, losing in the end by 114 runs.
Yeah, I think the thing for this was Hong Kong's bowlers adapted well to the longer form of the game. Haseeb Amjad and Tanvir Afzal bowled particularly well in both innings. But the batsmen, obviously not used to building innings, struggled in this longer form. Nizakat Khan and Tanvir Afzal both scored half centuries for them, and Shkwat Ali and Haseeb Amjad batted well in the second innings, but really there wasn't much to write home about for the Hong Kong batting.
The four-day match was followed up with two World Cricket League matches. I was going to say ODIs, but it's not clear whether they have ODI status or not. I think the answer is no, because Namibia doesn't, even though they're going to play a whole bunch of them in this tournament. In this game, this was a particularly exciting game. In the end, Namibia won by a single wicket, but Hong Kong, I think, will be extremely disappointed that they didn't manage to close this out, because although they were only defending 194, they had Hong Kong at 8 for 153 before Kutz and Coombe and Schultz managed to get them in the last over.
Close game. Hong Kong bowled very well at the start of the Namibia innings. The Namibia were 13 for 4 at one point, and then so got back into the game through Van Schoor and Sarul Berger. But I think Hong Kong will be pleased with their performance in this match, despite the defeat.
And as we're recording now, we may as well give a score update. The Namibia is 8 for 61, which they may, given their depth in batting, the endless all-rounders that they field, get some sort of total that might be defendable. It looks good for Hong Kong to post their first win of the tour and this tournament.
I don't think we'll give a prediction for this match. It's a bit dangerous giving a prediction for a match that's actually going on whilst we're recording, but Hong Kong started well in this game. They were, had maybe a 15 for 7, so they're disappointed to have let them score as much as they seem to be going to.
Joining us on the podcast now is the general manager of Cricket Germany, Brian Mansell. Thanks for coming on the show, Brian.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation.
Just going to start briefly by mentioning a rather unfortunate incident that's taken place in Bonn and I think Cologne regarding some vandalism of pitches. I believe is now solved, but can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Well, yes, some unknown people vandalised our two artificial pitches last week in Cologne and Bonn, primarily in Bonn, where the pitch was totally destroyed. It's a shame because it was the first pitch that we'd bought in Bonn something like 13 years ago from Not Sport, who are one of our biggest providers and supporters, and a pitch that revolutionised cricket in that region. But it was damaged. We don't know why. We don't know who the people were. The police have very little chance of finding them. It's had a very positive effect in that the cricket community in the Rhineland, in the Bonn and Cologne area, they're very close together. Have come together. We've got 16 teams there, and together we laid a new pitch 2 days after it being destroyed. So it's actually been very positive in bringing people together and people realizing how important it is to look after the facilities that we do have, because like any other associate country, we're short of facilities.
It seems that it's something of a targeted attack. Is that fair to say?
Well, it was obviously done by cricketers because they damaged the pitch on a length, so if it had just been anybody, they could have cut it at any point of the on the pitch, but it was obviously done by cricketers. That's our opinion, but we can't prove anything.
Okay. So we'll move on to maybe more better news now. So German cricket in general, what's the sort of current situation for our listeners who might not know?
Well, yeah, if we're talking about cricket and developing cricket in a country where cricket is not a major sport by any stretch of the imagination, then I think we're doing quite well. We've doubled participation in the last 4 years, and we've got something like 3,000 cricketers in Germany, including kids and women, which means that we've got more in terms of participation than any other country in Europe, other than the high-performance countries. You know, we've got something like 800 kids playing cricket. We've got 100 women playing cricket in a league structure, and we're growing all the time. I think last year we had 150 teams in 12 men's leagues, several youth leagues, and a women's league. This year we're probably going to expand by another 10 to 15 teams. So it's growing all the time. In terms of our national team and the performance side of things, then we're doing pretty poorly, to be honest. Our national team got relegated last year to Division 3, which is nothing short of a disaster for German cricket. You know, we went into Division 2 hoping to win the tournament and just never got going. Lost four of the games were very running out in, you know, by a couple of runs here or there. So that's a big challenge, and next week we're putting our plans into place by setting up a new performance program. It's called DCB Super Series, which will see something like 40 to 50 of the best players in Germany playing regularly against each other in a T20 tournament. The inspiration we took from the North Sea series between the Scottish and the Dutch, obviously at a higher level, to make sure that our best players are playing against each other. And then towards the end of the summer, we will be going to Husum in northern Germany. We'll be playing some friendly T20s against our friends in Denmark, which we do on a regular basis.
Okay, and how is sort of German cricket doing at reaching out beyond the sort of traditional immigrant sort of playing population, your sort of your native Germans, if you like?
In terms of the adult game, it's very difficult because anybody who picks up a bat for the first time and plays league cricket is going to be playing against people from the subcontinent or England who've been playing cricket all their lives. So it's not realistic. What we are doing is emphasising native Germans, if that's the right word, at youth level. If you can enter under 15, much more than 50% of our players are Germans, and by that I mean true Germans. And the lower you go down towards under 11, under 12 age groups, then it's becoming very, very high. So at the moment, I would say the best 1,000 cricketers in Germany are all from cricket. In terms that might be different, and that's our target. But I must make it clear that we deliberately don't make any difference between anybody from any country, whether they come originally from Pakistan, England, Afghanistan. There's a lot of Afghanis playing very good cricket here in Germany. We don't make any difference, and any cricketer helps us to grow the game.
You mentioned there about some matches later in the year against Denmark. Is there anything else in the line for the German national team, especially in terms of ICC tournaments? Obviously, with the World 2020 moving to a four-year cycle, there's a bit of debate what's going on with the European qualifying structure and whatnot. Have you heard anything that you can share with us?
No, we don't know. Anything specifically. We expect a tournament to take place early next year. That will be Division 3, which we will be part of. Where that will be, when that will be, we don't know yet. You know, it could also be the year after. I'm sure that we'll find that out in the next few months. But our target is to get a good team to go to Division 3 and to get out of Division 3 and head towards Division 2.
And what about the women's national side?
Well, that's our jewel in the crown, as our treasurer says, because you asked about native Germans. Last year we held a tournament in Berlin where seven European countries took place, a T20 tournament over several days. And we finished second behind Italy. And from the 14 ladies who were playing in our national team, I guess at least 10 of them learned the game in Germany. I think we're pretty high up the pecking order in terms of European cricket or European women's cricket. Our national team is very successful. They won nearly all their games except the game against Italy. And it's something that we're trying to promote, and it could be a way of actually getting the German press even more interested.
Yeah.
Because there is a severe lack of sports for women in Germany. I mean, the football is the dominating force, obviously, in terms of sport here in Germany. But women's cricket is something that the women could actually call their own, and it grows very, very quickly. It's a wonderful experience to see these people taking the sport seriously, getting better and performing on the field, and it's something that we really want to focus on in the next few years. We have a fantastic women's officer as well, Monica Loveday, who has done fantastic work over the last 4 or 5 years getting every woman she ever meets interested in cricket. It's if you're a woman in Germany and you meet Monica, you've got to watch out, because you'll be playing cricket within a few weeks.
And is the women's team set to play this year at all, or?
Yeah, there's a tournament in Jersey, I think in July, I'm not sure, it might be August, very similar to the tournament we held in Berlin. This tournament started, I think, 4 years ago in Belgium, and it's taken place in Jersey, and then in the Netherlands, and then in Germany, and this time it's Jersey's turn, and, you know, we're going there with a chance of winning it. We certainly hope we'll do well.
Obviously, that tournament currently sort of outside of the formal ICC Europe structure. Is there a hope that that can be brought in, and perhaps the winners getting an opportunity to play against your Scotland, Ireland, and Holland?
Well, I think it's something we should be aiming for, because the standard is we are behind those countries, and we don't want to just go there and get hammered, because that would, you know, kill off everything that we're doing. But we would certainly like ICC to consider doing a Division 2. For the women, because it is something that can grow. Italy have got a very, very good team. France have got a good team. We've got a good team. Jersey are fantastic. And there are more countries coming on. You know, I heard something about Austria and something about some of the Baltic countries. So it's something that's definitely growing, and something that all of the countries are interested in developing.
Okay, I think that just about wraps it up. So thanks for coming on the show, and hope we can get the incident in Bonn and Cologne sorted out, and German cricket can move on onwards and upwards.
Thank you for having me. Okay, bye.
Looking ahead, Andrew, there's a number of matches coming up in the next couple of weeks. The first of those will be a warm-up between Scotland and the UAE. The UAE's touring Ireland after that, and Scotland will be playing Afghanistan, and that'll be a 3-day match. It's being played in Southampton, which is an interesting choice, but hopefully the weather is the main reason. But it'll be a good form guide for the matches to follow.
It's good that the teams, obviously, with this being now the, you know, the theoretical pathway to Test cricket, or the alleged pathway to Test cricket, as I've been calling it. Your teams are obviously taking it a lot more seriously than they perhaps have in the past, and you playing a warm-up game is definitely a sign of that. So, you know, it's good to see them doing this. Obviously, you know, Hong Kong and Papua New Guinea played a warm-up game late last year as well. So, obviously some, you know, more preparation for the longer form is going on, which can only benefit, I think, you know, these teams. Southampton, as you say, is an interesting choice of venue. I'm hearing that, a couple of World Cricket League Championship games, I think, Kenya against the UAE will be played there in July or August. So obviously Southampton is volunteering to host these games. It's good of Hampshire to arrange for that. Then on to the actual I Cup games themselves, Ireland against UAE and Scotland against Afghanistan. I think the Ireland UAE, you'd expect Ireland to win that. Apparently, the Intercontinental Cup now has mandatory release rules, as much as those rules are worth. So hopefully, Ireland will be at full strength for that game. So you'd have to back a full strength Ireland in a 4-day game against the UAE. Scotland, Afghanistan's a bit more interesting. Could be a very close game. Afghanistan playing in somewhat unfamiliar conditions. They haven't played in Europe too often in the past. So that could be a close game.
Yeah, the Scotland, in the past, Afghanistan has played particularly well in Scotland, I think mainly because they have such quality fast bowling, and that's proved an undoing to the Scotland batsmen. So that could be very interesting to see, particularly early May, how the batsmen go in that match, and maybe a low-scoring game.
Low-scoring, perhaps. Obviously, we hope that the weather plays ball. obviously it didn't for Ireland against England, and hopefully it will for these two games.
It's the Manchester at least will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what teams they can field as well. And Namibia didn't have either Jerry Snyman or Craig Williams for the I-Cup. They did have them for the WCL games. But hopefully Ireland will field their best 11. And their bowling was obviously pretty weak in the World Cup. And so it'll be interesting to see how they go in a four-day game.
Yeah, and this will be the first match in charge for the new coach, John Bracewell, so it'd be interesting to see if he changes the tactics of the Ireland team, or if they, you'll shake the batting order up a bit, or you'll try things differently with the bowling. So it'll be an interesting match for a number of reasons.
And finally, a preview of a tournament that I know nothing about, but hopefully we'll get some news on it at some point. Mozambique will be hosting Zambia and Malawi in a T20 triangular tournament, pretty much as we're recording. Zambia will only be seeing their under-19 team, but I think as with any of these tournaments that are organised outside of the ICC, it's good that the teams will be getting a bit of cricket in.
Yeah, always good that they get some cricket in. It'd be nice if we could know about it a bit better than we sometimes do, though.
Finally, news, Andrew, they have finally released the schedule to the World 2020 qualifiers, because they finished the preliminary rounds and they couldn't possibly tell us when they were going to play the tournament until the regional qualifiers were finished. And so therefore, anyone who had to book travel plans, including myself, of course, had to wait until less than 2 months before the tournament starts to have it. But we do finally actually know when and where the World 2020 qualifiers will be played.
It's about time. As far as I'm aware, from what I've heard, these fixtures are actually confirmed before Christmas, but they didn't want to release them until they actually knew which teams were playing in which matches, which is a bit ridiculous. You know, they released the fixtures of the World Cup more than a year before the start, perhaps I think even about 18 months before the start of the tournament. So obviously they can do it when you don't know which teams are going to be involved, but as we've seen in the past, your associate tournaments, they don't really matter. Nobody wants to travel to an associate tournament, apart from us.
Well, they released the fixtures for the World Cup 6 months before they released the fixtures for the qualifiers for the World Cup, which were a full year before the World Cup. But we did manage to get that kind of leaked out, so we managed to find out where we were supposed to go. In this case, we heard just enough to kind of have a rough idea, and hopefully there'll be enough people there to maybe make a bit of a noise about the idea that they should be telling us when these tournaments are and promoting them, because associate tournaments like this are actually, in some ways, this is almost the true World Cup in world cricket these days with 14 teams. It's the biggest tournament that the ICC hosts.
By some distance. They like to pretend the World 2020 is 16 teams, but we all know it's 10 teams.
And we'll have lots to chat about in our next episode. So I'll talk to you then, Andrew. Thank you.
Thank you.